Hello and welcome to the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast, where we explore the fields, kitchens, and stories that make the Massachusetts food scene so special. I'm your host, Nissa Gadbois. Each week, we'll connect with farmers, food producers, and the community that makes the Commonwealth's food scene so vibrant. Join me as we meet the passionate farmers, food producers, and chefs who are shaping the farm-to-table movement right here in Massachusetts. Hello and welcome back to the Massachusetts Farm-to-Table podcast and part two of my interview with Amanda and Brett Sovick. If you missed part one, you can go back and listen to that one and then meet me back here for this one. Make sure you check the show notes on this one. Lots of great links for you. And now on with part two. Okay, we're back. We were talking about a carrot and Joel Salatin.
Yep. We were talking about
how does that one end?
Well, so that one ends like this. The moral of the story is, you know, the carrot that's grown in more nutrient-rich soil, biologically nutrient-rich soil, is going to provide you a more nutrient dense food for your body compared to the one that we see today in our production agriculture, where the soil has essentially been sterilized and you're consuming a food that's being forced to grow in a particular way.
And that just, I mean, that has a cascading effect and benefits our communities in so many ways, because healthier food leads to healthier people, less medications, less doctor visits, less illness, less problems. Mm-hmm. You know, fueling the body with good food is key to one of the keys to having a healthier lifestyle.
I agree. When we started farming here, we noticed that food that was more nutrient dense, we didn't feel like we needed to eat as much volume of
right.
food, because your body's after the nutrients, not necessarily the calories. The calories will come, but what they really want are those nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when people look at it and they say, oh my word, it's so expensive to buy this food. Yeah, but give it some time. You might find you're eating less anyway, because you're more satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Faster. And you're going to feel a whole lot better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, the great thing is that we get the benefit of chicken and duck eggs every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not like it was, you know, before we had them, right? You would eat breakfast and you would be like, oh, I'm still hungry, right? Or I need to eat more. You're actually satiated. You're like, you feel full. You know, and you feel like you can start your day and go.
Yeah.
I instantly feel like my batteries are recharged almost as soon as that first forkful goes down.
Yeah.
If I delay or I come in late for breakfast or lunch or whatever, you know, and I'm tired and I have a headache and I'm just gassed, right? Mm-hmm. I get such a boost just from, you know, the first mouthful. Yeah. And you can just feel your body just come right back. And it's an awesome thing. And that doesn't happen. That does not happen with a store-bought egg. That does not happen with, you know, store-bought meat. Yeah, it's incredible, the biological response that you actually can participate in.
Yeah. Imagine if everybody grew something in their backyards, they'd see just what we're talking about. It's unreal.
And that's actually one of the services that we're offering through the the farm practice is helping people to set up growing beds for farming in their own yards. You know, if they want it to be aesthetically pleasing, make it a raised bed that, you know, it just it's pretty to look at and it's growing your food for you, but getting people to do it for themselves. And, you know, I think the hardest thing is getting to the end of December, which is usually when we run out of the fresh food that we've grown ourselves. And we have to rely on the supermarket and stuff that was grown in greenhouses. And it comes from, you know,
everywhere.
Yeah. It comes from all over the place, Mexico, you know, Florida. You know, it's not stuff that was just grown in our backyard. And not to say that it's not healthy food and it's not, you know, it's not good for you. It's better than eating junk. But it's so sad. We lament having to buy tomatoes from the grocery store right now.
No.
And we can't wait to grow tomatoes again.
Kids are like that. They don't. The tomato is the number one thing they will not eat from a store.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this just, that's not a tomato. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I can totally relate to that. So let's switch gears for a second. And I'm kind of curious about how you both feel about the farming community within Massachusetts. How does that look to you?
Well, I'll start.
Okay.
and so I'll start because I had no clue what the farming community looked like 2-3 years ago. I had no idea. You know, I said, okay, I'm going to be a farmer, like a whole lot of people who were trapped in the pandemic. You know, and I said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it right. And I didn't know who was on my agricultural commission here in town. I knew like a person down the street who, you know, kind of saw the same YouTube videos that I saw and said, hey, let's grow chickens, you know, for meat. And I'm like, that's a fantastic idea. Let's do it. Like I had no clue. And I still don't. I mean, there's still so much that I'm learning every day about, you know, our agricultural community, and who's doing what, you know. But I know that it's thriving. I know that, you know, there is a market out there that is encouraging like the forward momentum that we have as local growers. And it's inspiring. It's just absolutely wonderful. And I think that just in the very short couple years that I've been doing this, engaged with it, my farming network, my network of farm friends has grown exponentially. I used to be a pretty diehard scout leader in town. Like I was a scout master. I served as the committee chair for the first all-female BSA troop in town, which Amanda is the scout master for. And they boast a whole bunch of young lady eagles already in the few years that they've been right here. So really cool stuff. And I have to say that the network of farm people, you know, all of them, you know, families, young people, old people, everyone, are so much more connected than even than the scouting community that I thought was an awesome community. It is an awesome community, but these people have your back. Like if you run into anything, they're right there. And it's an awesome thing. It's not like, oh, I'll be over in a bit. And then like 2 days later, they show up. They like, we had a minor, I'm going to call it minor because I'm so brand new to this. We had a crisis on the farm whenever we first received our sheep. The sheep came about 6 weeks ago. the wonderful family that we purchased them from said, we think that the two girls are pregnant, but they're not due until the end of March. And we said, awesome. 3 days later, one of them has a lamb. So she started to deliver probably in the wee hours of the morning. Sad story, the lamb had passed. And like, I'm texting on the phone with the goat lady across the street that I got to know. And I said, hey, what do you know about like sheep? And she gave me like the book on sheep in, you know, in a text message. And then she was like, I'll be right there. And not only did she and her daughter show up, her husband came over with all of the things and all of the stuff that we need. The folks that we purchased the sheep from, they came over and everybody was there right now. It wasn't like a, you know, oh, I'm cooking dinner, I'll be available here. It's like, I'm there right now. And, you know, we knew each other, but it wasn't like we had any kind of real interpersonal interactions. We didn't invite these people over to our house for dinner. We didn't, you know, do any of that stuff. We just have farming in common. And they're like, whatever you need. And I had the most intensive educational experience on the care of sheep and sheep husbandry that I think I could have ever signed up for.
It was like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love that feeling.
There was so much information that was like blasted at us.
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, it was incredible because I was able to understand all of the nuances that were going on with the mom, right? And mm-hmm. I understood why, you know, the lamb had passed. And I understood why we did the things that we were doing. Before that, I would have no idea. I would have absolutely like, okay, so I guess this is natural. Just let her keep doing her thing. And, you know, that could have been, you know, to the detriment of mom. So at least we got mom saved, which was great. The lamb didn't make it. That's okay. It happens. You know, timing was not exactly what was originally thought, but you know, it was a huge learning experience and the community surrounding all of that. So supportive, and so helpful.
Yeah. I'm setting up a tent outside of their paddock next time one goes into labor.
We found the same thing. We're also first generation farmers. Kind of. My husband's family were chicken farmers, his grandparents, and then his parents' generation did not farm. And so we're sort of on his side anyway, picking it up again. And mm-hmm. I don't know how long it's been since my family were farmers, probably 5 or 6 generations. So we found the same thing within the farming community, that right. Even if you don't know someone well, it's almost like family.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And anytime somebody gets hurt and they need extra hands and you've got extra hands, whether they're your own hands or your grown kids' hands, you're there.
Right.
And dropping off whatever they need or running for supplies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's really restored my faith in humanity in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So
well, if you think about it, that's how communities used to operate. It used to be smaller communities that everybody worked together, and maybe you had a landlord, but every single person who lived on that piece of land had something that they were responsible for and responsible for contributing to the entire community. You know, if we could get back to something more, and I think locally what I'm seeing now, in my limited experience doing this, not just for our family in our backyard, is I'm seeing communities trying to get back to that community farming and that community responsibility and not relying on industrial farming and shortages in supply chains and food that's grown inhumanely. You know, I think the thing that got me hooked on growing meat chickens in the yard is that they are the happiest chickens on the face of the planet for the 8 to 10 weeks that they're on this planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're taken care of and they get good food and they get sunshine and fresh water and they're not sitting in their own poop all the time. And that makes me feel a lot better about consuming another living animal. And, you know, they're treated humanely straight through to the end. And that's not what you find in industrial farming. I think the hardest thing for me moving up from, like I said, I've always had a garden in the backyard just because I kind of grew up with it.
Yeah.
And I came up from New Jersey, which is the garden state, and came up to Massachusetts. And the one thing that I hear everybody who does farming either for themselves in their backyard or on a larger scale is that it's really hard. The hardest part is getting the soil to where it needs to be. And of course, this goes back to soil health. It's just the nature of, it's just the geology of the area. And in the case of Duxbury here, you know, now that there's more pine trees than there are oak trees anymore, the acidity of the soil and stuff like that. And you've got to kind of bring that pH into balance and bring the organic matter back. And, you know, we were lucky inheriting the opportunity at DiLorenzo Farm because, you know, the soil is already in amazing condition.
That's a huge gift.
Yeah. But the I think the first time I saw the community coming together, for the farming community coming together, I was actually a fairly new employee. We moved up here because I took a job at Battelle Laboratories years ago. I'm an environmental scientist. That's my day job. And then my farming is my everytime job. the woman who runs the Marshfield Farmers Market now, Lori, she had just gotten into the whole farming thing herself. And, you know, we would get so excited. She would come to Battelle once a week with a trunk full of fresh produce. And we'd all swarm out of our offices and just, you know, go buy up whatever produce before she took it to the Marshfield Farmers Market. And she ended up, you know, running it and bringing more people in the community together so that they could collaboratively sell their products and make for a good experience for people who want to buy organically raised local food and products.
Yeah, for me, the whole sense of community and farming is, I think, is best illustrated whenever you're doing something like taking in hay, right?
Yes.
So I never in my whole life have I ever participated in such an event until 2 years ago, right? And my mentor, I have a lot of mentors, but my primary mentors are the Chandlers here, Jeff and Priscilla Chandler here in Duxbury. And he hays just about every square inch of Duxbury that is here. And so he brings in and puts up a fantastic amount of hay, right? In my opinion. I mean, I haven't seen any other haying operation. So for my very limited knowledge, it's an incredible amount of hay. And I think that you haven't experienced like community and agriculture until you've done something like that, because all of these different people from their network show up at a field, right? None of us know each other. Well, I shouldn't say none of us know each other. Many of us don't know who the other person is. And it's just one of these amazing things that happens. And I can't even come up with a parallel, like where you find sort of the same community engagement, maybe at a farmer's market. I don't know. It's like, you know, you show up and you introduce yourself to whoever's there, and then you're off and running. you know, in the field grabbing hay, loading up the hay cart. And then, you know, everybody piles in vehicles at the field and then heads over to the farm to bring it up and put it in the barn.
Yeah.
And everybody's trading jobs and everybody's like, there's just this whole sharing of the labor and sharing of that time that is so different than,
it's
than
magical and kind
anything
of
that I've experienced. It's,
yeah.
It's incredible. And it's whenever you think about it, it's just, it's a really moving thing.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, you know, a couple old people or a couple middle-aged people or whatever, like anybody can do it. It's accessible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You know, unless you're too small where the bale is bigger than you are, then that's different. But the kids can be out there,
yep.
You know?
We had our kids and folks who were helping, their kids would be lined up on a rail inside the barn, and the bales were flying, and you had everybody from, you know, folks in their 40s right down to teenagers just throwing bales, and it got put up so fast, and then it was time to eat.
Right.
And it was like, wow, is this real?
Right.
It's really happening.
Well, the funny thing is with the Chandlers, whenever we're done putting up hay, it's a tradition. There's a cooler that comes out filled with popsicles.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And we all sit there, we're drenched in sweat and we're covered in hay, and we're sitting there munching on popsicles, you know, in what little bit of shade we can find. Cause you know, normally it's pretty hot whenever you're putting hay on. And you're just like, I wish I could take this popsicle and just rub it on my neck and just cool
it's
down.
Sticky, but it's cool.
It's really the coolest thing. It really is.
So, where can people find your produce, and how can they get a hold of you?
Well, we're working on building out a larger digital footprint. But at the moment, we're on Facebook, and we're on Instagram. And if you just look up Foul Play Farm in Misbehavin', you'll find us there. We do have a website, but you'll find an under construction page because it's under construction.
Well, you're farmers, and so
right. So normally that stuff is saved for the dead of winter, except with what we're doing right now, all of our projects are moving even through the dead of winter. So build projects, you know, anything that we can do to try to keep things moving forward,
yeah.
You know, is what we're doing. And there's very little in the way of kind of a forced stop day unless the weather says absolutely not.
But we sell our eggs year round. We have chicken eggs, duck eggs, and limited supply of quail eggs again. They decided that it was not too cold to lay eggs anymore.
Right.
We do grow meat chickens, which is a labor of love, and we have repeat customers, and we keep having to increase our numbers because we keep getting sold out every single time. And which is a good thing, right? And then during the summertime, our produce will be selling. We can sell it, you know, out of the farm. We'll have a farm stand coming soon.
Right.
We plan on having a farm stand over at the DiLorenzo farm that will be the town's farm stand. We plan on having a farm stand here at Foul Play Farm. And then, of course, we're at the Marshfield Farmers Market as well.
Right.
Yeah. And we're also going to be doing some limited selling at the Pembroke Farmers Market as well. So the town of Pembroke has reinvigorated their farmers market.
Right.
I'm actually meeting with them, I think, tomorrow. My calendar might be wrong. I might have had to meet with them today.
Ooh. Oh, whoops.
Sorry, Pembroke. Well, I'll call you. Yeah, they've done a great job. They're reinvigorating the Pembroke Farmers Market, which is exciting. And we're excited to at least be a limited part of that. We'll have to see, you know, sort of what our bandwidth is. We know we want to show up at additional markets and do more things. But obviously we kind of have to, she reins me in, right? She turns to me and looks at me every day and goes, how much are you going to do? Right. How much do you want to do? And, you know, it's just one of those things. So yeah, those are the places.
Like a typical farm partnership where one partner is like, yeah, let's do all the things.
Yes.
Now. And the other one's like, can we focus this a little? So yeah. I'm the do all the things one,
right,
in this house. And he's the, well, could we just focus this a little? Cause that's a lot.
Have you thought about this at all?
Yeah. Like, so typically my question is, yeah. When he talks about more animals is like, where are they going to live?
that is the perennial conversation in our house.
Yeah,
we have a lot of acres, but not a lot of barns. So,
right, the barns are coming. We will have more animals at some point, but mm-hmm. We have to slow down a little bit. The other thing that people might want to know about, starting soon, close to the end of April, we are offering a learn how to grow your own chicken course.
So,
where people can come and actually take part in growing meat chickens with us. We will keep them on the property. We will teach them how to mix up their food when they need to be in the brooder and when they, you know, they can come outside. All the different things that you need to know about broiler chickens, and then how to process them at the end.
Right.
And that people will get a chance to process their own chickens, and with help, of course, and guidance, because, you know, first time for everything is not the most straightforward. So anybody who's interested in that should reach out through the Foul Play Farm webpage.
Fantastic. So last question, here's a fun one. If you could invite any three people, living or historic, to your farm for dinner, who would they be and why?
You go first, because you're very excited about it.
I am very excited about this question. So local legend, I would invite Josh Cutler, who was our state representative, and he's moved on to a different position now. But he's been a huge part of the Duxbury community all these years. And he actually did a tour of the farm. He's come to talk to my scouts multiple times. He's all about education and environmental protection. And I would love to have him come over to the farm and sit down at a picnic table and have a meal of all of our farm grown food, just as a thank you for being such a great proponent for our community and doing so much for our communities. And he's kind of tied with Michelle Obama, and I absolutely love her. If I remember correctly, she is responsible for a vegetable garden at the White House.
Yeah.
And she invited children to come to the garden and taught them about growing their own food. And I just think that is just such an amazing thing. And I'll let you go with the third.
Why?
I don't know. You pick the third person.
Well, there's actually multiple thirds, but I think, the most important third living people include, you know, Joel Salatin, of course, because he's, you know, and because he's Joel and it's great. you know, a soil farmer from Iowa. His name's Gabe Brown. I'm also a big, huge fan of what he's doing. And I would consider myself a disciple of both of them. So those are living folks, folks who aren't with us anymore, are actually from our childhood, President Reagan. the reason why, and maybe not many people know, that he was sitting in the presidential seat whenever one of the largest from since the 1930s, the largest agricultural crisis in America was happening. And he was instrumental in fortifying our food bill, our farm bill, sorry. Well, food bill, yeah. And I would absolutely love to have him come and sit down and see where we are today because of the things that he did. He did some incredible, incredible work. And you can't, there's nothing that compares to just the energy that he put into buttressing the farm bill and ensuring that farmers, I mean, he included small farmers in what he was talking about, but I mean, you know, really at that level, you know, you're really looking at sort of the industrial food complex, which is something that we're like, eh. But the fact of the matter is that he recognized the insurmountable challenges that farmers were faced with. And he developed pathways to kind of relieve that pressure and help farmers kind of recalibrate. Because farmers, we aren't marketers, right? We aren't salespeople. You know, we put stuff in the ground and we grow it, right? And so that's one of the hardest things. That's one of the biggest challenges I think that farmers have. And I think Ronald Reagan helped sort of bridge that gap, helped solve some of those problems for those farmers. He put the right people to connect with farmers in the right places in order to just help quell that struggle.
So, which is why I would pick my third person, speaking of marketing and getting people to know what farm good nutrient dense food is like, I would invite Guy Fieri, because if you watch him eat, he loves everything. That he goes to places where he knows he's going to love the food. And if he could come to our farm and eat our food that we grew on our farm, he would be head over heels, over the top, and people would realize this is, you know, we've got to get back to this. This is what we have to get back to.
Well, he'd never leave the farm. He would give up his career doing his thing and, you know, become, you know, somebody who works on the farm, growing the food the way that we're going to be growing it, because he knows just how fabulous it is. Well, I doubt that would ever happen. But,
well, yeah. You never know.
It's always fun to dream.
Oh, that was so fun. What a great interview, you guys. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us. This was fantastic.
It was fantastic. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. This episode of the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Farms Permaculture and the shop at Renaissance Farms. Please visit them online, and while you're there, sign up for the weekly newsletter and get 15% off your next order from the shop. Each edition of the newsletter includes farm news, articles, recipes, and updates on upcoming classes, courses, workshops, and special events. Subscribers also receive exclusive subscriber-only discounts each week. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for joining us on another delicious journey through the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media and join our Facebook group, where you can join the local farm-to-table movement. Links are in the show notes. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future guests, we'd love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at massachusettsfarmtotable@gmail.com. Until next time, remember to eat local, support your farmers, and keep the farm-to-table movement moving. Thanks for listening.